Good morning. I want to thank everyone for inviting us to give a presentation on the job task analysis that's been recently done by the National Board of Public Health Examiners. And Ian Lapp, who's at Harvard and is also a member of the National Board Council, as I am, was not able to be here, so I flew up from Baltimore to give this talk. And you can see I've been involved with the National Board for about 3 years now. I'm chair of the testing committee. Chris Yeager, who happens to be my son, but is also an ASPPH, Association of Schools and Programs of Public Health, intern, and he's done and continues to do the data analysis. And we want to really give thanks to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and ASPPH for supporting this job task analysis. And so the presentation has these objectives. I'm not going to read them all. But the main goal of our job task analysis is to survey domains and tasks that are identified by workers as associated with their positions. But really what we're after here is not what they were trained to do, but what they're doing. And so, and we want to do this to refine the certification in public health examination that is sponsored by the National Board of Public Health Examiners, and to really make this examination not only on basic principles and foundational elements in the five core areas of public health, academic core areas of public health, but also relevant to what people actually do in the workplace. So we had an advisory committee, and I won't read all these names. I'll leave it up there for a few seconds and you can see, but these were people from the public health workforce, if you will, public health professionals. Who worked with us on the board to develop this job task analysis. And so the responsibilities of this advisory committee were to define the target practitioners to whom we wanted to send the survey, to develop demographic questions for the survey, to develop job tasks and skills, and then to determine the distribution plan for the survey. So what is an analysis? It's to really define performance domains and tasks that are performed by a professional group. So, you know, public health is so diverse, and it really of a profession. And so it's very difficult to actually get any kind of a handle on what public health professionals do. And this was the first attempt to try and do that across the whole range as much as possible of public health professionals. And so we established domains, and under those domains with this advisory group, tasks. And so this table, while a bit complicated to look at, if you look over on the gold side, on your right-hand side, you'll see these are the domains. Critical strategic analysis, communication, diversity and cultural proficiency, advocacy, leadership and systems thinking, management, finance and policy, biological and environmental applications, ethics, collaborating and partnering, and program planning. These are the 10 domains under which we then identified a whole series of tasks. And over on the left of that are the Council of Linkages, Competencies, ASTO, Knowledge and Skills and Attitudes, the Association of Schools and Public Health, Blue Ribbon Public Health Employers Advisory Board, and ASPPH's Framing the Future MPH report. And you'll notice here that there's a lot of continuity across what all these other organizations have defined as kind of domains or knowledge areas or skill areas that kind of almost map to the 10 domains that were used in the job task analysis. And here they are again, so I won't hold on that slide. So we sent the survey out to 124,000 plus individuals, and also distributed it through 51 organizations, some of which are shown there. So there were 200 tasks divided amongst these 10 domains, not evenly. Some had more, some had less. And everybody that completed the survey was asked to score these tasks on a 0 to 4 scale. Never performed, all the way up to essential. in the work they were doing. So 8,100 started the survey and ultimately came down to 4,392 who were employed and not current students, completed enough of the survey, or almost all the survey, that is what we used as our as the number of valid responses to the survey. And so if you look at the some of the demographics, you can see that the majority were white, 64%, with about 11% black or African American, and you can see from there what the demographics of the public health workforce that we received valid surveys back from looked like. This is the education level, and we did target graduates in this. And so you can see the vast majority had master's degrees, some doctoral degrees, about 20% doctoral degrees. If you actually look at what those degrees were, this is broken down by degree, and the green are master's, and the kind of pinkish color are doctoral degrees. So the vast majority, 51%, not vast majority, but 51% had Master's of Public Health degrees, about 9% PhD or SCD. And you notice that DRPH, which is about the fifth one down, 2.7%. So there's a whole range of master's degrees and doctoral degrees, and most of which were MPH. If you look at employment experience of this group, over on the on your left-hand side, there's the work experience across the total work experience. And then on the right-hand side is public health work experience. And you can see that the majority are probably either 0 to 2 or 0 to 3, between 0 to 5, really, years in the public health workforce. Whereas total work is spread out more evenly. Now, if you look at where the employment setting of the respondents was, you can see that the majority were government, followed by academic. And when I say academic, I don't mean that these were a bunch of assistant associate or full professors filling this out. There are very few of those types that filled out the survey. Most of them are people that have degrees, graduate degrees, but that are working, you know, on projects in academic settings. Could be a clinical setting, could be a clinical academic setting, could have been a research academic setting. And then employment level, most were mid-level positions. 50-some percent were mid-level. And then came upper level and then early level. If you look at geographic features, most were working locally, then regionally, nationally, and then internationally. Now, if you look at the primary area of expertise, the majority, 16%, said they were epidemiologists. That's their epidemiology. Epidemiology was their area of expertise. That's not surprising. That's kind of what we see in schools of public health in general and programs. A lot of students take multiple courses in epidemiology, and then they graduate from a generalist program or from a program where the degrees are department-based. From epidemiology, but the next one is health education promotion, which is almost 12%, and then it goes down from there: environmental health, healthcare administration, etc. If you look at job titles, and this is very interesting, there were thousands of job titles, thousands, and that nobody in public health calls themselves the same thing, even though they might be doing similar things. Actually, we're going to write a paper about this. Some of the members of our advisory council, you know, are going to try and encourage some type of a consolidation and standardization. Now, what Chris did was he collapsed all these into 30. So, there's a wealth of data there, but you see that epidemiologist. So if someone said they're an epidemiologist, then it's, I have trouble reading this, 5.3%. But for you epidemiologists, here's the employment setting. So almost 86% are working in the government setting. And that's not surprising. Many fewer are working in academic or other settings. And this slide I'm going to skip because we don't have time to go into into the details of the statistical analysis of some of this. This just shows you that across the whole data set, the domain ratings, the highest domain rating is in the area of critical and strategic analysis, and then collaborating and partnering, and you can see that these scores drop down from there. The top 10 related tasks across the whole data set, you can see, is the top one is collect valid and reliable quantitative and qualitative data, critical strategic analysis, and then using information technology, and then ensuring the application of ethical principles. So you can see there, these are the list of the top tasks across the entire data set. Now, epidemiologists, for those who said they were epidemiologists, this is the domain ratings, and you can see critical strategic analysis is at the top, which you would expect it to be, ethics, and then biological environmental applications in public health. These are the ranking of the domains. And these are their tasks for the epidemiologists. Use information technology for data collection, storage, and retrieval, obviously, is a critical task for epidemiologists, and it had a very high score, 3.63. So this means that it's in the essential, very important essential range for epidemiologists to do this kind of stuff, collect and valid and reliable data, apply descriptive techniques, describe a health problem in terms of magnitude. These are things you would expect epidemiologists to do, and this is what we find that they're doing. Now, if you look at tasks by degree, MPH and DRPH, these are domains, and the color you see is related. So critical analysis, collaborating and partnering, ethics are very similar for those who have a master's degree and those who have a doctoral degree. There's, for the most part, except for instance, advocacy, a little bit higher for doctoral degrees than master's degrees. Communication, about equal or just one level off from one another. So it's very comparable across the two degrees. If you look at the top task ratings by degree, again, MPH, DRPH, you can see collect and valid and reliable quantitative data are very similar. There is a difference about using information. Using information are at different levels in DRPH versus MPH. If you look at task domains by gender, you can see that they're pretty parallel, but there are some important differences. Both, again, at the top, critical strategic analysis, collaborating and partnering, and ethics are very close to one another. Management and finance, a little bit higher on males than in women. Advocacy, interestingly enough, a bit higher in males than in women. I don't know how you interpret these yet. We're certainly going to, when we publish this information, we're certainly going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what some of it may mean, and we may never be able to do that, obviously, for some of these specific tasks. So these are task ratings by gender. Again, they're very comparable, but showing some differences, especially, for instance, over on the right-hand side, left-hand side, interpret results of statistical analysis is very different between men and women. This is task domains by employment setting. Kind of complicated, obviously it's difficult for you to try and get a snapshot of this while in a short presentation, but you can see that critical strategic analysis is really near the top across the settings, whether it's academic, business, clinical, or hospital, government, or nonprofit. Ethics is, for instance, the domain of ethics is higher in clinic or hospital, but other than that, there's a lot of parallelisms. Look at leadership and systems thinking. Cuts across all of these areas. These are tasks by employment setting. So these are the top 10 tasks by employment setting. And again, at the very top is collecting valid and reliable and quantitative data right across, from depending, regardless of the setting. Synthesize information from multiple data systems is only appears twice in business or corporation and in government at very different levels. And task domains by employment level, clinical consultant entry, mid, and upper. You can see again, critical strategic analysis for the most part is at the top, except under clinical ethics. And the domain of ethics is at the highest level. And task by employment level, again, clinical consultant and entry, mid, and upper. You can see right up across the top, they're all involved with collecting valid and reliable quantitative data. And then there are some quite apparent differences in clinical in particular has a lot of kind of unique tasks that those people working and classifying their job as clinical or clinical related are quite different than consultants entry and mid and upper level public health professionals. So what are the next steps with all of this? First of all, we're working on a much more refined analysis. Actually, Chris has just completed a factor analysis. And the factor analysis really is quite interesting. It did go into 16 domains. The task fell into 16 domains instead of 10. And, you know, we don't have time to present that, and it's only, you know, we're only first seeing it. We can force things into 10, but then there are more kind of mixes where some of the tasks relocate, for instance, than if we have allow 16 domains. And so we want to next, you know, once we have decide on, you know, the domains and perhaps moving some tasks around into a different domain based on the factor analysis, then we have a big task ahead of us. And that is that for the certification of public health exam, we have a database now of over 2,000 questions. And we want to begin to map those questions to these domains and tasks and find out, are there any gaps or any questions that are loaded in one particular area versus another? And so this is the current CPH certification of public health content outline for the exam. If you're interested in what that is, we have much more detail on the National Board of Public Health Examiners website. You can see the content outline, which is quite detailed. But you see, these are the main elements of the content outline: EPI, biostatistics, health policy management, environmental health, behavioral social sciences, etc. The job task analysis, 10 domains are here. We may end up with keeping 10, or we may expand that some. And now what we're going to do, as I said, is map the questions in the database. And then where we find there are gaps that are not addressing tasks in these various domains, then we will get item writers, as we do now, to write questions for the exam in those task areas. And again, the idea is that to make the exam more relevant to the practice of public health for someone who is a recent graduate or current student in a school or program of public health who takes this exam, so that those people who hire individuals from schools and accredited, Council on Education and Public Health accredited schools and programs, can say that they have a minimum level of competence, that's what the exam is designed to test, in these areas that are not only foundational in the core areas of public health, but also address tasks that they will perform in the workplace, so that you could be assured, if you're hiring someone, that they can at least hit the ground walking. They will have enough of this knowledge, and then you can train them up in your areas to do the specific things that you would like them to do. And so if you have questions about this, if you would like the data set, which we're going to share toward the end of the summer, contact Allison Foster, who is the president of the National Board of Public Health Examiners, and that's her email address. Thank you. So we have a few minutes for questions.
We do have a few minutes for questions, and if you can come to the microphone and state your name and your question, that would be great.
Hi, I'm Leslie Fierro. So on the survey, was there an option for people to kind of write in if there was something that they were doing that wasn't covered on those tests? I mean, it was really not like 200 tests. It's like you can
right.
Change numbers, so.
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't do that. The survey was onerous enough for people to complete that we didn't have open-ended questions to add to that. Right. Sure. But having said that, if these kinds of things probably should be done every 5 years, and I think that we've learned a lot from this survey. And the next time a survey is done, whether our organization does it or someone else does it. I think that, we will improve the survey, obviously, and maybe open-ended areas are appropriate.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Pittman, and I'm from CSP. Quick question. So with these results, it looks like lots of epidemiologists are turning to the CPH as their credential for their profession, since there currently is one. Where do you see the CPH going for epidemiologists to credential the epidemiologist-specific workforce?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, first of all, I don't think I have data that shows that a lot of epidemiologists use CPH to get certified. I don't have a demographic breakdown of who actually takes the test and what they consider themselves either expertise-wise or to be doing. Second of all, I don't think the test will go into specifics. I think that's up to an organization if you want to say, here's a certification exam for epidemiologists. This certification exam is for public health professionals. I don't know if you know or not, but the Council on Education in Public Health, CEPH, which accredits all schools and programs that are accredited, is in the process of accreditation, revision, criteria revision. It's very different. And if you notice that one table that I showed you at the beginning, where the origin of our domains, if you put CPH's new domains instead of the five core areas, of biostatistics, environmental health, epidemiology, social behavioral sciences, and health management area, they're not there. It's very, very different. And schools and programs are reacting to this right now because it's going to impact curriculum in a major way. And so I think, if epidemiologists or other specific public health professional areas want to have a specific certification, they'll have to develop it themselves. This one is broad-based. Okay? No, I don't think so. We didn't get... You notice I didn't put age down. I don't know if we asked a question about age.
Or expecting a trot.
Yeah, we didn't expect that. We didn't ask that, no. So you can see how long people have been in the workforce.
Right.
And you always hear that there's going to be a tremendous retirement. I was just at... at an accreditation for one of the schools' site visit. I chaired the site visit for the reaccreditation, and we met with community representatives, which we always do when we're doing a site visit of a school. And a number of them said, yeah, there are going to be all kinds of jobs in the city, county, and state health departments. There are so many people going to be retiring. And I said, well, you're going to have to tell that to the students, because a lot of the students don't appreciate that. They think that there aren't a lot of jobs opening up, because all we hear is how under-resourced all of you are. But if that's true, then I think it's an important message to get out there. And what are the workforce needs? And that's part of...
Maybe in the future, certainly, that would be great to have.
Yeah. Workforce needs is part of a use of data like this, too. If you can begin to collapse them into here are the job titles, you know, some reasonable representation, and then you can start to look, you know, we really need resources in these areas because we're understaffed, under-resourced financially, etc. That's what some of our advisory members say to us, and that's why they want to see a paper published about that issue. Okay, thank you very much.